You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by GetOutOfTheMess.com. Let Asha, your Legal Shield associate, connect you to a legal insurance plan that's right for you. Quality attorneys at established law firms for about $20 a month.
That's so cheap. Is that legal?
Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old, rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, personal empowerment coach and host of The Overwhelmed Brain. This is the personal growth show for the critical thinker. On every episode, we'll talk about practical, down-to-earth steps to help you improve your mood and keep you sane in this powerful journey we call life. I want to help you bridge the gap between your emotions and reason, causing you to discover why you do the things you do and what you can do to reach higher levels of happiness and lower levels of stress and overwhelm. Everything I talk about on this show should not be mistaken for actual medical advice or treatment, and is intended to be for educational and informational purposes only. Or is it informational and educational purposes only? I think I got that backwards. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your medical treatment. What you'll find here is an increase in your emotional intelligence, a strengthening of your self-worth and self-esteem, the motivation to be your authentic self, and the forward momentum to help you learn, heal, grow, and evolve. All right, I'm going to get into a topic that I really don't want to talk about. And that is suicidal thoughts. I don't want to talk about this because if I say the wrong thing, then what happens? You know, what if somebody has a suicidal thought and I say the wrong thing and they go and do something about it? I don't want that to happen. I don't want to have that level of responsibility. But I think it's important enough to talk about, because I don't know, we don't talk about it. I mean, do you ever talk about any thoughts that you have with your family, with your significant other, with your parents? Do you ever talk about like a thought that I'm going to kill myself or something like that? Does that ever come up in conversation? I remember a friend of mine said, you know, I'm having these suicidal thoughts. And my first thought is, really? What for? What's going on in your life? Instead of saying, oh my God, you got to get to therapy. There's a problem with you. I just said, wow, really? Because I wanted to know, because I didn't want him to be afraid to share what he needed to share with me. I mean, as soon as someone says, I'm having suicidal thoughts, that's not necessarily them saying, I'm going to kill myself. That's not them necessarily saying that. That is them saying, hey, I'm having these thoughts. Let's talk about it. At least this is my opinion. I mean, like I said, I don't want to talk about this myself. What if I say the wrong thing? But I want to talk about this at the same time because so many people experience this. And I'll tell you what, even non-suicidal people experience suicidal thoughts. So I want to make it clear first and foremost that these kind of thoughts are absolutely perfectly normal. I wonder what psychiatrist out there is wringing my neck through their earphones or whatever. I believe that suicidal thoughts are perfectly normal. And I bet that at one point in life, you've thought about something along that lines. Even if it was, I wonder what would happen if I wasn't on this planet anymore. I wonder what would happen if I wasn't alive anymore, which isn't necessarily a suicidal thought. It's a thought of, I wonder what life would be like if I didn't have life anymore. So it's a touchy subject. It's very sensitive. And you probably know someone who's done this. I know at least, I don't know, three or four, maybe five people in my life have taken their life. So I think it's important enough to talk about, even though it's possible that somebody out there could be so sensitive to it that they hear me talk about it, and they want to do something about it. Honestly, I don't really think that'll happen, because as soon as you start talking about it, then there's a small release in the pressure of having the thought. And what I mean by that is, when you mention, hey, I'm having a suicidal thought to someone, there is a small release in the pressure of everything else going on in your life. Typically. I'm not saying always, I'm saying typically. There's just a tiny little bit, like, that was hard enough to talk about. But once that comes out, it opens the door for conversation. Now, I will say this before I go on. Yes, if you are having serious thoughts of suicide, then don't delay. Go to suicidepreventionlifeline.org. I really don't know why that website name is so long. But that's the first one that I find. It's called suicidepreventionlifeline.org. Or you can just type in a search engine, suicide hotline, and you'll see a phone number, and you'll also see a live chat box, and it can be totally anonymous. And if you need that number right now, it's 1-800-273-8255. So what's great about that is that these people don't know who you are. And you can just say, hey, I'm having these thoughts. And they've talked to people that have had these thoughts too. So if you're on the cusp, on the edge, that's what I want you to do. If you don't want to do that, I can't force you to do that. I would just like you to do that. Because what do you got to lose? I mean, if you're really that close, if you're having these thoughts, then what do you got to lose? It's worth at least chatting with them. So I won't focus on just that. I mean, if you're at that point, there is a resource for you to connect with. But let's talk about the normal, everyday, or abnormal, however you want to look at it, the normal, everyday thoughts that you have that include, I wonder what it would be like if I was dead. It's a weird topic to talk about, but I don't want it to be repressed inside of you. I don't want you to hold this stuff in, because any resistance to something amplifies it. Resistance creates persistence. Resistance of thought creates persistence of thought. Hey, I don't want to think about, you know, my ex-girlfriend with another guy. I'm not saying that this is my thought, but I'm saying that could be a thought of yours. I don't want to think about my ex with another person. And the more we try not to think about it, the more it persists. And when it does come up in our mind, it's much stronger. It's amplified. Instead of letting it come up and just allowing it to be, we resist it. So when it does come up, we fail to resist it. I mean, there's just no way. Sometimes there's just no way to resist this stuff, and it's going to come up. And then when it comes up with a vengeance. And we have this thought that we don't want. And now what do? Oh, we try to resist it more. We push it back, or we get angry. We punch a pillow, or we yell at someone we love and we hurt their feelings, or, you know, who knows what. I remember when I broke up in that 13-year relationship, one of my first long-term relationship, my girlfriend left me, and the next few days, I was like, well, my life's over. I have no more happiness. There's no more reason to live. And what's the point? I mean, I had all of those thoughts. I don't know if I actually went to a suicidal thought, but certainly it felt like suicide would have been a great way out. But where I went in my thoughts were, well, nothing matters from this point on. And that's important to know, that there are going to be life events, and I know you've had them, where you said, nothing matters from this point on. You may not have used those words, but it probably felt that way. Now that this part of my life is over, nothing matters from this point on. That's a harsh thought to have, and it will create a state in you where suicidal thoughts can breed. I don't know if that's a good word for that, but it will create this state, and you'll be in this space, and you'll be like, well, suicide's going to be a lot easier than dealing with this, even though it's temporary. You know all states are temporary, right? The worst emotional state you can be in is still temporary. Just like the most happy, in love, wonderful, peaceful, joyful, elated state you can be in is also temporary. Those are extremes in the emotional spectrum. And you're going to experience the emotional spectrum throughout your life. So when it gets low, 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 and you feel like, what's the point? Beyond this, there's nothing that matters. When you get to that point, you can also remember that, hey, a month from now, 3 months from now, I'm going to be in a different space. And the thoughts I'm having today aren't going to be the same thoughts that I have in 3 months. The thing is, sometimes good stuff will happen in our life for weeks, even years, and then one day it stops, and that trend, that pattern of good days finally stops, and we think, great, it's over. This pattern stopped. I was spoiled on this pattern. Now it's over, and I'm in this dark, crappy place. I almost said the S word. Crappy instead of crappy. Well, I'm in this dark place, and it feels like, almost said the S word again, crap. And when you feel this way, these thoughts come up. Because these thoughts, they're always in there. I'm not going to lie to you. You have every thought you could ever have already inside of you. You have thoughts of suicide. You have thoughts of love. You have thoughts of happiness. You have thoughts of sadness. They're all in there. You just don't access them all the time. And especially sometimes when you need them most. Like being in the worst, darkest, depressed state, it's hard, if not impossible, to access, I remember when I was happy. I mean, it's hard to do that. So you can't. So you're stuck there and you feel like it's never going to get any better than this. What's the point? The point is that it always fluctuates. It's like the stock market. It will always go up and will always go down. It's like housing. It will always go up and always go down. Your emotional state fluctuates. And I want to make that an important point of this segment, because when you're in a down state and you have suicidal thoughts, your mind is cloudy because the body doesn't want to die. Your mind starts coming up with ideas because it's in that foggy state. It's in that hazy, foggy, cloudy state. And it's trying to come up with good, coherent thoughts. Like, what can I do to get me and my body into a healthier state? The body wants to survive. The body wants to exist. There's a reason why when you cut your skin, it heals. The body wants to live. There's a reason that my stepfather, who has drank alcohol for the last 45 years, probably longer, every single day to get drunk. There's a reason that his liver is still here, processing whatever it can, whatever's left of that liver is still processing whatever it can and keeping him alive, even though he has tried to destroy it, not purposely, but year after year after year, he's still alive because the body wants to live. And sometimes the mind isn't on board with that, because the mind gets foggy because of external life events, because of people leaving us, because of people dying in our life, because of a job that we lost, because we lost our income, because we have no money in the bank and collection agencies are calling us and we want the love of our life back and they won't come back, or we made a huge mistake and we feel guilty about it. And when any of this stuff happens, the mind starts to get cloudy. And when the mind starts to get cloudy, it starts to disagree with what the body wants. I mean, I could argue that the mind and body are one and the same. They're certainly connected, but I really believe that the body is the rest of the mind. If you look at the brain as the mind, I think it's probably a limited viewpoint. If you look as the mind as the entire holistic view of the body and the brain together, then I think you have a better perspective of what's going on. So when I say the mind gets cloudy, I should say the brain gets cloudy, because the mind is part of the body, and this is all semantics. But it's good to remember that when there is a moment in time of your life that gets scary, lonely, sad, or even depressed, where you don't feel any emotions or you just feel numb, that it does pass. It does fluctuate. It has rises and it has falls. The problem with depression is that you can't see a positive future. The problem when you're in that space of suicidal thoughts, you believe that it's never going to get any better. But it can, and it does, because it happened before. And if it's never happened to you before, and you're still here, that means your body is successfully communicating that it wants to live, and you're doing your best to make that happen. You may not think you're consciously doing your best to make that happen, but there's a reason you're still here. There's a reason that you're listening to me now and hearing me laugh while I talk about suicide. I mean, it's a sensitive subject, and I mean no disrespect, and I am certainly sensitive to it because I don't want you to go that route. And I also have much love and respect for the families that have suffered through it and the people that I know personally and their families that I know personally. But I want this to be talked about. I don't want this to be a subject matter that gets swept under the rug and denied. I want it to be out in the open. When my friend came up to me and said, you know, I've had some suicidal thoughts, I was like, oh, really? Like I said, let's talk about it. And he was able to express what was going on in his mind. And sometimes that's all people need. If you can be a safe place for someone to express that without getting that freak out response, like, you need a therapist, go get a therapist, and just be there, open-minded, and listen, that might be all it takes for someone to let that pressure out. And if you're having suicidal thoughts, if you're having these thoughts, again, they're perfectly normal. In fact, I call that trying it on. I know it's a little weird, but I've had not just suicidal thoughts, but thoughts of being a perpetrator in crimes. Let's see, what else? Like, what would it be like if I jumped off a building? What would it be like if I punched someone in the face? What would it be like if I robbed a bank? What would it be like if I wasn't here anymore? I've had all these thoughts. Haven't you? Or at least some of them. Maybe you haven't, but I've had a lot of these thoughts because I purposefully tried them on. When I figured out that what I resist persists and amplifies, I decided to try on what I was resisting. For example, I decided to try on, in my mind, what would it be like if I was drowning? I mean, certainly that is unpleasant. I never want to do it. I never want to experience that. But I wondered what would happen, and I would go through the motions in my mind because I didn't want to carry the fear around. The fear of drowning can debilitate you. I mean, the fear of anything can be debilitating. But if you are carrying around this fear because you refuse to visit it in your mind, not that I'm saying that you have to, I'm just saying that if it's a massive resistance inside of you, then maybe you can try it on and see what happens. A lot of this stuff is not pleasant to try on. I can tell you right now because I've tried almost everything on. And some of it, well, a lot of it is unpleasant. But what happens is, as soon as you stop resisting what you fear, especially in your mind, then those thoughts aren't so pervasive and they don't repeat because you've already been there. You've already tried it. And that's the most important point I want to make in this segment is that, besides that all your thoughts are perfectly normal, is that you try them on inside your mind and you go through all the details inside your mind and then you learn what the outcome is. And then your brain goes, oh, that's what would happen. And then you can move on. I really think that a lot of life's suffering has to do with not knowing an outcome. Not a lot of it, maybe some of it, but when you don't know the outcome of something, then sometimes you fear it. I don't know what's going to happen, so I'm afraid. So let's try it on. What would happen if this happened? That's why I go to the worst case scenario. You know, what's worse than that? What's worse than that? And then if that happens, what's worse than that? What could possibly be worse than that? Like, I imagined what would happen if an alligator pulled me into a swamp. Not only would I be drowning, but I would have these sharp teeth sunk into my body and I would be bleeding and I would be being rolled over. And it just sounds like an awful way to go, but I went through it. I went through it in my mind. Again, I'm not saying that you have to do this. I'm saying that whatever thoughts that you're resisting, that you think are a problem in your life, those are the ones you try on to completion. And believe me when I say this, this is not advice. This is just an opinion. This is not something I'm telling you to do. I want you to seek professional help if you're having these thoughts. I want you to call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline if you're having these thoughts. I want you to do everything you can with a professional, not what some guy on a podcast told you to do. I don't want that for you. I'm just saying that whatever you're resisting is usually what you carry with you throughout life and causes you to behave in certain ways. So if you have any pervasive, obsessive thoughts, you know, dark thoughts, and you think it's bad or wrong or it's unhealthy, I'm here to give you my opinion that it's not bad, it's not wrong, it's not unhealthy, and yes, you should talk to somebody about it. I think you should express it. I think you should find someone to express to, find someone safe. It doesn't mean that a friend of yours or family is going to have an answer, but just being able to get it off your chest helps you release some of the resistance to it. And let me say one last thing about this. If you have these thoughts that you think are bad or unhealthy, then why don't you also have other thoughts that you think are good? And let me explain that. Let's just say that you have a thought, and this is something one of the patron members told me recently. He said that sometimes I'm driving along and I think, hey, what would happen if I swerve on the other side of the road and hit that car? And I was like, wow, that's an interesting thought. My response to that is, okay, you can play that out in your mind, not while you're driving, but play that out in your mind and see where it goes. And then also, now that you've played that out, also play in your mind what else you could do. For example, what would happen if you told someone to pull over and then you pulled your car in front of theirs, you got out of your car and you gave them a $100 bill and then you drove off. What would happen then? Or what would happen if you followed someone into a gas station and you went up to them and said, hey, I really appreciated how well you drive. I noticed it. They may not be something you want to do, and somebody might think you're being sarcastic, but play it out. What's the difference between playing that thought out and playing out the first one that you felt might not be good for you? Play out all these thoughts. Allow your mind to do what it does, which is look for alternate paths of behavior. You know, you ever see the movie, I think it's called 8 Seconds with Nicolas Cage? In that movie, he can see 8 seconds into the future. And what that means is that he can play out all these scenarios over the next 8 seconds. If he does this, then what would happen? If he does that, then what would happen? For example, there's one scene where he's walking down this path looking for someone. And what he does is he sees himself go right and sees what happens in the next 8 seconds. And then he sees himself go left. And then he sees himself go straight. And then he sees himself backtrack. And he sees himself go upstairs, downstairs. And he's seeing all these paths of possibility. And when he finds the right path of possibility, that's the path he takes to, I think, find the person. I won't give the movie away, but I think he was looking for someone. And I thought that's a great way to look at things, is that when you have a thought process going on in your mind, where does it lead? And then also think of other thoughts. It doesn't all have to be bad thoughts. It could be good thoughts too. What would happen if I told that person they're beautiful? What would happen if I bought a dozen donuts for the office? You know, you have all these paths of possibility, not just the bad ones. So if you find yourself with these pervasive, obsessive thoughts that keep repeating, add some other thoughts in there that aren't necessarily what you might consider toxic for you too. And that will change things up a bit. And it will allow your mind to do what it does best, which is look for all paths of possibility. So again, just to reiterate, don't listen to this guy on a podcast. If you're having suicidal thoughts, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255. And they also have a chat. You can do anonymous chat with them. I think you do have to put your zip code in, but I think that's all they ask for. And if you're in that space, at least release that pressure a little bit by talking to someone. But I don't want you to feel bad or wrong or toxic yourself if you're having these thoughts, because they're normal. I know you probably don't like them or other people don't like them, but that's why I like to say also fill your head up with other thoughts. I mean, if you're going to obsess anyway, you might as well obsess about some stuff that might just cause you to be a little less in the dark and a little more in the light, a little happier, or a little less miserable, depending how you look at it. Oh, and one last thing. Suicidal thoughts typically revolve around something that happened in your life or some things that happened in your life. I want you to remember that a lot of times when you have a suicidal thought come in, it's because of something that you don't want to face. Something's happening in your life that you don't want to face. So remember to include the thought, what would happen if I faced that? I mean, I think about situations where you're with someone and they're just driving you crazy and you feel like it would just be easier if I was dead instead of dealing with this person. I mean, if this thought comes up, then I want you to consider what would it be like to face this person and say what I really want to say. What would it be like? Because just doing that could be the difference between having a suicidal thought and not. I want you to remember that there's an opposite to the path of a suicidal thought, and that is usually what you don't want to face. So what would happen if you faced it? Play that scenario out. And if you can, go in that direction. You may have to face things that you don't want to face just so you know the outcome. Because either way, you don't probably know the outcome. So you might as well do something that keeps you here a bit longer instead of something that might have a permanent outcome that who knows if you'll like or not. But at least if you're here and you try something that's the opposite that maybe you don't want to face in life, again, what do you get to lose? You might as well face that thing and see what happens and see if it changes your thoughts at all. I know this doesn't work with everything, but again, you try it on. I want you to live. I want you to be here. I want you to keep listening to this show. So stick around, and I mean that in a lot of ways. That's a deeper comment than you can imagine. And we'll be right back after this. Welcome back. This is the part of the show that I usually talk about a sponsor like Asha with getoutofthemess.com. I usually talk about that, and you can certainly check that out if you like. She is a representative for Legal Shield, so if you've been thinking about getting a lawyer for any reason, or at least asking legal questions, I highly recommend you have her connect you to this service. If you're in the U.S. or Canada, go to getoutofthemess.com. or dial 678-355-8777, and she can hook you up. Now, what I want to do is instead of talking about this service, I'm going to do something a little bit more relevant to the last segment. You see, Asha is a musician. I've mentioned that on, I don't know, one or two shows. She was on one of my very special episodes on sexual abuse because she is a survivor of that from a very young age. And she's done a lot of healing around that. And she's had a lot of, let's just say, dark thoughts over the years. You know, like many survivors, she's had to deal with guilt and shame and bouts of depression and all kinds of things. And one of her methods of creativity and, I don't know, maybe escape has been creating music. And so, you know, she's been a musician for a long time. And I've even played with her at the Hard Rock in Atlanta. That was something she kind of obligated me to do. But I actually enjoyed doing it. I play harmonica. And we had a good time that night. And it's something that I'm not used to, but she's used to being on stage. I'm not. So it's an interesting thing that has happened in my life after meeting Asha. And my music has definitely improved because of her. Because I never really took it as seriously as I do now and practiced as hard as I do now, because being on stage is a lot different than being by yourself when no one can hear you. But I'm going to take this moment to play one of her songs. Like I said, this has a lot to do, well, everything to do with the last segment, because this song is about the thoughts that you go through thinking that you are alone. And she's here to say that you're not alone. Now, I want you to listen the whole way through, even if some stuff comes up for you, because the song really is about getting through some of the dark thoughts that you can have. And I want you to get through those dark thoughts. I want you to get beyond those dark thoughts if they exist in your mind. Oh, and by the way, this is a debut of this song. This has not been played anywhere else. You're the first to hear it. And I think that's kind of cool. Here it is, Asha Lightbearer with You're Not Alone.
You can heal, you can feel, share your heart space, make it real. You can fly, touch the sky, free forever. But tonight you're alone. One more night, say goodbyes. No more questions, no more lies. They will see when you're free. No more heartache, rest in peace. But tonight you're alone.
Wow, that to me is a powerful song. I love it. I hope it affects you the way it affects me. I think it's very uplifting, very inspiring, even though it's about a dark subject. And that's what I'm trying to do, is just kind of keep the dark subjects in the light. Because when they're down there and they're repressed and they're not expressed, they're not brought out into the open, that's when they fester. That's when they turn into other things that aren't really in our best interest. So if you have any interest in Asha's music, you can go to ashalightbearer.com and check it out. Let's get to our next segment, Ask Paul, right after this. Welcome back. This is Ask Paul. This is where I read a listener email on the air and do my best to help them through a challenge. And this letter is from someone I'm going to call Chris. Chris says, I appreciate your input and wisdom. I listened to your podcast on boundaries, and one thing that stuck out was that when I honor my boundaries with my partner, it turns out to be my fault somehow. Let me give you an example. My partner tends to shout and blame me for things I didn't do. One day he's fine, the next day he's blowing up at me. He manipulates situations to make them all my fault, even though he allows and encourages me to take a certain path. No matter what I do, it seems I can't win. When he blows up and blames me for things, I feel like a child. I talk like one, I act like one, and instead of being emotionally conscious and standing up for myself, I close off. I know if I stood up for myself, he'll paint the picture that it's my fault, as he always does. This causes me to be the child again. I can't heal or overcome this yet. Do you have any advice? Thank you times, 1 billion for your help. Okay, Chris, great letter, great question, and you're welcome. I will do my best. From what you're saying here, I look at something like this as all about invalidating your emotions. If someone is blaming you and you're trying to honor your boundaries or express yourself and you feel like you're not being heard or understood, then most likely, I'm pretty sure that's what's happening, is that invalidation of your emotions is going on. And what is invalidation? It's when someone doesn't acknowledge how you're feeling. It's when someone doesn't take into mind the big picture of the relationship. For example, if you want a relationship with this person and he wants a relationship with you and you both want to move forward in happiness and joy and continue to grow and blossom the relationship, that's your big picture. It's funny, I was just talking to a client about this the other day, so it's fresh in my mind. But what happens is when you get into an argument and you talk about the details of the argument, the specifics of the things that are going on, then you get embroiled in those details and you get stuck in those details. And neither one, if you're both insistent on being right in your position, neither one of you will back off. Or in this case, you, Chris, have backed off and allowed him to, and I'm just going to say it, win, even though it's not really a win. It's just a word I'm going to use, and it's probably how you feel. So he wins, you lose, you walk away feeling sad, misunderstood, not heard, even blamed, and really put in your place. Again, for lack of a better way to say it, but that's how it feels, right? You walk away from this feeling like, you can't win. You can't get anywhere because you keep getting put in your place, so to speak. So what do you do? Well, what I do and what I recommend you do is to focus on this big picture. Focus on what you both want for the relationship. And that brings the question, what do you both want? Because Chris, I bet you know what you want for this relationship. But do you know what your partner wants for this relationship? I mean, that would be a great question, wouldn't it? You can go up to him and say, honey, what do you want for this relationship? You know, we argue a lot and it seems like I'm wrong about so many things. What do you want for us? You know, that's a good question. What's the answer that would come out of that? And that keeps you out of the details. When you get into the details, it's like saying, well, when you didn't wash the dishes, that means you didn't love me. I mean, that's such a detail that hinders you from progress. when you get embroiled in the details, it hinders you from progress. And progress is all about moving toward that bigger vision, that light, instead of staying stuck in stagnation in the microcosm of everything going on, all the bad stuff going on, you know? So you step out of the microcosm and look at the macrocosm, and you see the big picture and you go, that's what I want. And when you're in that big picture space, then you'll say different things, you'll do different things, and respond differently. And I know this is more about your partner blaming you and where you are with it, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But if your partner can also understand this perspective, if you both have this perspective, you know what? The bigger picture is that I love you and I want you to be happy and I want us to move forward and have a good relationship. I don't want this relationship to be hard and stressful. I want to have a good relationship with you. Great. If you're both on the same page, then you can step out of those details and go, does what we're doing here promote a good relationship? And if you're in those hard, stressful details, then the answer is probably no, which brings up the next question. Well, what would encourage or promote a good, healthy, happy relationship? Well, I might not say this if I wanted you to be happy. I would say something else. And when you approach it that way, it changes the energy. It changes the dynamic of the conversation. It changes the direction of the conversation. It changes how you feel about each other because it brings you back to that reminder space of, oh yeah, we're in this to enjoy each other's company, not make it hard for each other. Now, Chris, I don't know if he's in that space. It sounds like you're in that space. It sounds like you want this relationship to work. So you need to find out where he is in that space. Now, his big picture might not be the same as yours, which is bringing me to my next point. If he wants to blame, then his big picture might be to make you wrong, which is invalidating and not supportive or loving. And boy, if that's his big picture, do you think your big picture synchronizes with his big picture? Do you think that works so that when you go forward, you'll always be made to be wrong because that's how he sees you, or that's how he sees the relationship, that he's always right and you're always going to be wrong, and maybe you just need to listen to him? Is that what you want? Because if it is, then I would question what you want. I would question you what you want, because I would be like, are you sure? Does that make you happy? I would want to know what makes you happy. What would be the perfect scenario? What would make you happy? So I have a feeling that's not what you want, but just in case, I wanted to throw that out there. Now let's talk about being a child. You know, when you show up as a child, this is what Chris was saying, is that when you turn into that child, you're reacting or behaving as if you were a child in a situation that you didn't know how to respond to or couldn't handle. You don't feel strong enough. You don't feel brave enough. You don't feel like you have the resources, the tools to communicate in a healthy way. You feel dominated. You feel like you're being disciplined. All these things that we felt when we were children. Because when you're a child, you have very few choices. You're kind of in a family until you grow old enough to leave that family. And hopefully you have a good family, so it's not a family you want to leave, but you just want to leave so you can get out on your own and start your own life and maybe your own family and then go on from there. But, but the child that Chris is talking about is when you fear maybe confrontation, when you fear standing up for yourself because you feel small, because you feel maybe that you're wrong and they're right. And no matter what you do, there's nothing you can do. So you just kind of have to go with the flow and hope that they eventually see that you are a good boy or a good girl, or that you aren't a bad boy or a bad girl. I remember turning into this child myself several, probably hundreds of times through life. I definitely turned into a child many, many times when I faced my stepfather as I got older. It's like I'd never changed. I was always that, 10-year-old boy that was afraid of him. And when I was in my 30s, I was still that 10-year-old boy around him. When I was in my 40s, I still felt it. But by then, I had learned a lot about honoring my boundaries so that when he did show up in my life, I didn't show up as that little boy that I had always been with him. I mean, because that's why we go to that childlike state, is because the people that we know that we maybe never have stood up to or honored ourselves in front of, we know that they still see us as the child. And they haven't seen the, quote, adult version of us. So showing up as the adult us can be difficult because we haven't tested their response. We don't know how they're going to respond if we suddenly stand up for ourselves. I mean, this happens in relationships all the time, is that we fear their behavior if we do something that they've never seen before. Like when my stepfather showed up and he wanted to come into my mom's house, he'd never seen me stand up to him and say, "Sorry, you can't come in." He'd never seen that, and I didn't know what he was going to do. But I decided to find the strength, make it happen, and stand up and find out what happened. I decided to learn what the consequences were. This is one of the biggest leaps of faith in honoring your personal boundaries, is finding out what the consequences are of doing it. What happens is you have to visit in your mind what you'll lose. What will I lose? Will I lose a loving relationship with my stepfather? Well, I didn't have it in the first place. Will I lose some composure because he tackles me or hits me or yells at me? Well, it's worth finding out. This is my thought process. It's worth finding out because I don't want to show up as the little boy anymore. I don't want to show up as the child anymore. And this is a place for you, Chris, to figure out if you want to continue showing up as the child or not. And it sounds like you don't want to. But then you look at, well, if I don't show up as the child and I do show up as someone who can honor my boundaries as that, quote, adult, for lack of a better term, it's more like you're showing up to protect that child inside of you. I like to look at it that way, is when you honor your boundaries, you're protecting that child inside of you, because that child can be very scared, very frightened. And if you don't show up as the adult, then that child will have no one and you will feel alone. And just like Asha said in that song, you're not alone. You have you, as strange as that sounds. But when you show up as you, you can protect you. Because sometimes it feels like there's no one else there. And when you're in a relationship and the very person that you're supposed to love and trust and feel safe with can't do that for you, where else do you go? I mean, you can call family, but how do you face this person? How can you step into your power? You hear me say that every week. Step into your power. How do you do that? You remember that adult you is in there. That little kid has a big brother or sister, if you want to look at it that way. If that little kid was getting beat up on the playground, you as the big brother or sister is going to go out and protect him or her. That's it. I mean, I would. Even if the people were bigger than me, I would do anything I could to protect that child. So Chris, let me address what you might be doing, which is focusing on the idea that he'll make you wrong again. That is the microcosm. That is when you're going, I'm focusing on the very details of what might happen, instead of focusing on something greater than that. Like when he blames you, when he makes you wrong, I don't want you to think that it matters if you're right or wrong. I want you to step out of that. It doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. Because what is he doing in the overall scheme of things? Is he disrespecting you? Is he, like I said, invalidating your emotions? What is he doing overall? And you can find out what he's doing by just asking yourself, well, how do I feel when he blames me? Well, I feel hurt. I don't feel supported. And then I would ask you a drilling question. Well, how is that a bad thing? What? If I don't feel supported and I'm in a relationship, I don't feel, I want to feel safe with the person I'm with. Oh, safe. There's a big one. If you don't feel safe with the person you're with because they're blaming you and causing you to feel bad about yourself. Oh, there's another one. I feel bad about myself. I feel worthless. There's another big one. And you can bring this up. You know, when you talk to me like that, I feel like you don't value me. There's a big picture statement. You know, when you blame me, I feel like you don't care how I feel. And you might get a response of, you don't think I care how you feel? How about how I feel? Again, that's another invalidation. And if he wants to go there, let him go there. We can go there with him and you can ask, oh, I'm sorry. How do you feel? And then, you know, be genuine about it. Don't be sarcastic. And maybe he'll open up. Maybe there's something festering inside of him. And this is why he lashes out. Because when people hold things in and they don't speak what's on their mind, they'll lash out and they'll seem mean. They'll seem like they are not the same person. They change because they hold it in and they never express. So you may have to do a little digging and say, oh, how do you feel? What's going on inside of you? Tell me. I'm open. I'm willing to hear you out. That's a great place to go with someone when they're lashing out. Because if they're not normally like that or haven't normally been like that, then they're holding something in. And what they're holding in hasn't come out yet. So you may need to dig a little bit. Like, you always seem so angry. What's going on inside of you? Seriously, tell me, what's going on inside of you? That's a conversation that could be hard because you never know what's in there. And it's scary to ask. But once you ask, at least you're giving them the space to express themselves in a safe way. And let me give you this as a sort of a final thought. Well, maybe it's not a final thought, but it's getting there. One of the last things I want to say is, so what? And this might sound harsh. So what? He says that you're wrong. So what? Now what? Okay, I'm wrong. But that doesn't give you the right to treat me like garbage. You've been wrong before and it didn't make me love you any less. That could be a little confrontational. But really, let's not resist what's being thrown at us. Resistance creates the argument, or at least exacerbates the argument. It amplifies the argument. As soon as we resist and go into that defensive stance, it exacerbates what's going on. And now we're coming back at them with something we can throw back. So if he says, you're wrong about this and I blame you for it. Okay, I'll take responsibility. Now what? Well, you should take responsibility. You need to clean this mess up. Okay, I'll clean this mess up. What else? Is that it? What else? And let him vent. Let him get it all out. Let him see. Let's see where he takes it. Let's see how far he goes. Let's see what happens when you don't resist anything. Okay, I'll take care of it. And then you can go, so knowing that I'm taking care of this and I'm taking responsibility, are you still mad? Are you still upset? Well, yes, I'm still upset. And then you can ask, oh, well, what are you upset about? I'm upset that you did it in the first place. Then you can go, oh, okay, I can understand that. But now that I'm going to take care of it and clean things up, is there any way we can move on from this? And just see where it goes. That, you know, that's a hit or miss. And I don't really like the idea of submitting and saying, okay, I did it, or anything like that. But the concept is just to test it, to find out if your resistance is what fuels the fire. Because that happens a lot. Some people will yell at you and scream at you, be angry with you. And when you resist, oh, that's what they want. Bring it on. They say, bring it on. Bring on more of that. And because the more you resist, the more I'm going to win. That happens a lot. You're resisting me? Now I'm going to beat you down because your resistance puts you in a weaker state because I've learned how you resist. And I've learned to put you in a place that you don't like, which makes me feel better because you feel bad. I mean, that's all hard stuff to hear. You feel better when I feel bad? It might be a good question. But by taking away the resistance, you're figuring out what fuels their fire. How do you normally respond? Change that. If you always respond one way and say, I'm so sorry, change that. You might have to explore this a little bit and see what responses fuel him and which ones lighten him up. So that's another, like I said, hit or miss thing, but it's worth looking at, because always our response feeds someone else's behavior, just like their response feeds our behavior. And then the cycle continues if the behavior never changes. And you want to remember, the more emotionally triggered someone is, usually the more afraid they are, the more fear they have inside of them. If he's afraid and taking it out on you as anger towards you, you may have to reach inside yourself and figure out what's being violated in you. I mean, think about it. When he gets upset with you, when you look inside yourself, ask yourself the question, well, what is being violated in me when he gets upset? Because you're getting emotionally triggered. You might feel scared. Okay, so what is he violating? What causes me to feel afraid? Well, he's yelling at me. Okay, so how is that causing you to feel afraid? Because people yell all the time. So why is it specific to this situation? Well, he's yelling at me, which means he might get mad at me, which means what? He might hurt me, or he's blaming me, which means what? That what could happen because of that? If he blames me, then obviously he thinks I'm wrong. And if he thinks I'm wrong, why would he want to be with someone who's always doing things to him that make him feel like he needs to yell at me? I mean, this is where our brain goes, right? It just starts painting scenarios where, what if I am wrong? Now we're questioning ourselves. What if I am wrong and he's right and he doesn't like that about me? So, and here's another big one, he leaves me. He wants a divorce or whatever. He wants a separation. He wants to go date someone else. What if that happens? And then our mind visits these scenarios that may happen, but it may not. But our mind goes there anyway and then causes us to behave in a certain way to give in, to submit. So basically what we're doing is allowing them to exhibit bad behavior by becoming submissive. All right, you're right. I'm sorry. I won't do that again. I'll try to do better next time. I mean, that's what happens. That's when the child kicks in. I'll do better next time. I'm sorry. You're right. You're right. And I say, whoa, step out of that. Step out of that child role and step into your adult and go, wait a minute. Let's talk about this like adults. The way you're treating me right now is disrespectful. I love that word. I use that a lot when I have to. I mean, you're being disrespectful to me and I don't appreciate that. That's a great line to memorize so that it comes out on the fly. You're being disrespectful to me and I don't appreciate that. And let me just throw this disclaimer in, as always, if you're dealing with an aggressive or a violent person, saying anything confrontational could lead to a violent reaction or a physical reaction. So if you don't want to face that because you think that's going to happen, then I'm not recommending you do that. And I am recommending, if you're with a violent or aggressive person, that maybe it's time to plan your escape, because you may not be able to handle that situation. And how you feel today, and this is so important, how you feel today about your relationship is going to be the exact same way you feel a year from now, if not worse. Not better, if not worse. Because look at where you were last month. Look at where you were 6 months ago. However long your relationship has spanned, look at where you were years ago. Were you happier? Were you the same? Was it worse? 90%+ of the time, it was either the same or you were happier. Rarely was it worse before. Rarely. Because there's still healing that needs to take place in both of you. If you're in that type of violent or aggressive relationship, then you both have to heal, because one of you is tolerating it and one of you is doing it. You both have to heal from that. And if that hasn't happened, it won't happen, even if it does. But if it does, then we'd be having a different conversation. But knowing that you will feel the same next year as you do this year, if not worse, helps you put in perspective what steps you might need to take. So that's just with a violent and aggressive relationship. I didn't mean to go off on a tangent there, but I always like to throw in that kind of disclaimer talk just in case you are in that situation. I don't think I've heard from anyone who's actually in a physically abusive relationship, but I have heard from people who were scared that they might see physical abuse if they stay in that relationship. So I know it's out there, which is why I address it every time. So let me go back to what's being violated in you, Chris. If you ask yourself, what is being violated in me? Am I being disrespected? Am I being mistreated in some way? How is he mistreating me? And that's how you can figure out, if you were a child, what would this feel like? And if you were an adult, how would you step in and help that child and protect that child? Because you do need to learn to protect you. Personal boundaries is all about protecting you. Otherwise, you'll be in the same place next year, if not worse. And if you don't check in with yourself and figure out what's being violated, you won't know what to protect. If you don't know what to protect, you won't figure out what you need to do to stand up for yourself. So there's going to be some introspection on your part, figuring out what's being violated so that you know what to do when you're in that space. So there's no clear-cut, easy answer for you, but there is a path and a direction that I want you to start going in. Everything I just talked about here, keeping the big picture in mind. What's your big picture? Ask him, what's his big picture for this relationship? Or maybe his big picture is to always monitor you and figure out when you're wrong and point it out. Because if that's it, you need to question why you're there and why you'd want to take that. Because you're worth a lot more than that. You are worthy. You are deserving of love. You are deserving of someone who supports your path, who supports your happiness, and wants to see you succeed and enjoy life. I mean, that's what relationships are supposed to do. They're supposed to enhance the enjoyment and happiness that you can experience in life. It's a lot different being in a relationship than being single. It's not bad to be single either. Don't get me wrong. A relationship just enhances who you are, enhances the joy you can have. Yes, you can have joy being single. You can go to movies anytime you want. You can order pizza anytime you want. You don't have to worry about anyone else. There are pros and cons to both. But I like to see you happy in yourself, within yourself, by yourself, before you get into a relationship, so you can bring that happy, healthy person into the relationship with, hopefully, another happy, healthy person. And then you can grow and blossom together and create something even grander than what you started off with. And that's when a relationship can really expand to places that you've never been. But you have to bring that into the relationship. You can't necessarily find it in a relationship. You have to find at least a lot of it within yourself, so that when you get into a relationship, it gets enhanced and you're not already in a deficit. Because if you walk into the relationship with a deficit, guess what you're doing? You're starting dependencies on someone else and fulfilling each other's dysfunctions because you walked in the relationship without having healed from certain things in your life. I'm not saying that you can't go into a relationship not having healed. I'm just saying it's a lot easier to blossom the relationship when you don't already have problems walking into it. That's why rebound relationships don't work well. You break up with someone, you're feeling hurt, you're feeling like a piece of you is missing, your heart hurts, you're sad, and then you find someone else and you feel like, hey, they're filling that piece of me that's missing. They're filling that heart space I need. They're connecting with me on an emotional level. Now I feel whole again. And because you weren't whole to begin with, because of that loss that you experienced, you didn't heal from that and nurture yourself, you go into the relationship with a deficit, and now you're more, sometimes often, unhealthily dependent on them. I'm dependent on you for my happiness, so please don't go anywhere, and don't go out with your friends. I'm so dependent on you for my happiness. Don't talk to attractive people because I'll be upset. That'll make me think that you're going to leave me. That's how all these dysfunctional thought processes come up and behaviors start, is that we go into the relationship with a deficit of something inside of us that needs healing. So Don't worry, not all is lost. If you're in a relationship now and you already had deficit going in and you feel deficit now, or you have more deficit, and I know deficit's kind of a strange word there, but any sort of lack in you, anything that you're seeking from someone else to complete you, you've heard that term, you complete me, anything that fills that gap that you brought in. Sometimes that can work great. If you're in a relationship for the rest of your life and you both fill each other's gaps and you're always there for each other, that can be fantastic because you feel like a single entity, you know, growing together. But as soon as one of you leaves, that lack comes back. And they could just leave for a week. They could go on a business trip or out for a night with friends. And then you feel that lack again. That lack is what needs healing and nurturing before the relationship can blossom to its fullest potential. That's just my opinion. It's something I look at in my own life. It's something I take with me in my relationships. I hope this is the last relationship I have. That would be wonderful. I think I'll just assume it is. It makes me feel better knowing that this is the last relationship I'm going to have. Anyway, this isn't about me. It's about you, Chris. It's about anyone that's in this similar situation or who needs this information. And I hope this helps. I hope this gets you through what you need to get through, and then you can find that person that can honor those boundaries inside of you. That person's there and will stand up for that child, because there's only so much that child can take before they have a breakdown. And when the breakdown comes, who knows, maybe that's when the adult steps in and goes, that's enough. Have you ever reached that point? That's enough. No more. That can help too. Breakdowns are a great path to a breakthrough. So maybe that needs to happen too. Thanks so much for writing, Chris. And thanks for listening to this episode. We're done. We're going to end the show. I'm going to say some thank yous in my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. Hey, I want to thank C. Fortune for their review of The Overwhelmed Brain book. I appreciate that. It was a really good review, too. Glad to read it. Thank you so much. And thanks to JNella102 for their review on iTunes. Wow, another great review. Thank you, too. And by the way, if you've reviewed anything of mine from a different country, I want to hear from you. I can only see the U.S. iTunes and U.S. Amazon reviews. So if you've never heard me mention your name on the air, just send me a link to your review and I'll be happy to thank you on the air. I also want to thank Asha for writing that incredibly powerful song. That was the acoustic version. I actually play harmonica on another version of that song. And by the time this recording goes out, you'll probably find that song on YouTube somewhere where you can see me playing and you can hear it, what it sounds like with the harmonica. But I'll leave you to your sleuthing skills to find that. What you heard today is the debut, but we couldn't help people recording the song at the Hard Rock Cafe, so we posted that online too. So about the book, if you haven't heard about it, it's what I like to call the A to Z of self-empowerment. It's the Overwhelmed Brain physical paperback copy that you can find in bookstores like Barnes & Noble or online in all kinds of places like Amazon and other places. The Overwhelmed Brain Personal Growth for Critical Thinkers is your path to honoring your boundaries, getting into alignment with your values, and developing your self-esteem and confidence so you can create the life you want. It's all about self-empowerment, and that's what I want for you. Check out the Overwhelmed Brain book today. And I want to thank the dear members of the Patreon program that are a big reason that we're still here so many years later. If you want to support the show and or you want access to private episodes, worksheets, and even email coaching, consider joining the TOB Patron Program at patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. To all you patron members, I appreciate you. And I hope you enjoyed the last episode in the Patron Program called The Problem with Mind Reading. Yes, we all think that we know what each other is thinking, so our behavior is based on our assumptions. It's a great topic, and I hope you head over there to give it a listen. Yes, you have to join to listen. But there's a complimentary episode available for those of you who just want to find out what goes on in that secret club over there. Head over to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com for more information. And whether you join the patron program or not, I want to thank you if you're using the Amazon link at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. The Amazon link is the easiest way to give back. So if you've been listening since, I don't know, the dark ages, use that Amazon link every time you shop. When you shop, Amazon sends us pennies on the dollar. So the more you do it, and the more of you that do it, it makes a big difference in keeping our costs down and bringing you this show. Thank you so much for using that link. Your shopping is making a difference. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to end the show by reminding you that you're not alone. And let me share something with you. There was a period of time in my adult life that I spent 10 months in a dark, cobwebby cellar, voluntarily. Now, it doesn't sound as foreboding as I make it sound because, you know, I had lights. But I had to go upstairs to go to the bathroom. But downstairs, it was just a basic New England cellar that wasn't exactly the best accommodations. I did this after my divorce. When I got divorced, I decided to spend some time with my mom, get to know her better because it's been years, and get to know her without my stepfather in the house. I mean, I grew up in a house where I didn't know my mom. I mean, I never knew who she was without that toxic influence in her life, in our lives. So after my divorce, I decided, you know what? I'm going to go live with my mom for a while. But the only room she had available was in the basement. It was a small house. And I decided, well, you know, what else have I got going on? I'm going to get my life back together here. And I'm going to spend some time with her. And if that's where the only bed is, that's where I'm going to sleep. And I did. I slept down there and it was dark. And it was just my cat and I. When my cat was still around, and he kept me company. So even though I was alone, I had a pet, and that was wonderful. I loved my cat. But I also had, you know, my little tablet computer. I can watch videos on my tablet computer. So I connected to her Wi-Fi. And at night, I was alone. I mean, yeah, my cat was there, but I had no conversation with my cat, even though I did converse every now and then with Ming. But I was alone. There was no human contact. So I remember thinking, well, what am I going to do? I just feel so sad and lonely. And my mom usually went to bed early. So when she wasn't around, I was downstairs and there was still no human presence. I could chat with people. I can get on Skype. But I still went to bed alone. And it wasn't a good feeling. And most of it was because I hadn't gone to bed alone in a long time. And so getting used to going to bed alone was hard. And one of the things that helped was, like I said, my little tablet computer, because I could watch videos. And I've noticed throughout my life, whenever I feel lonely and I turn on a video or a movie or a TV show, that I actually feel like I'm part of it. I actually feel like I'm part of something bigger, like I'm involved with something. I'm part of the story. And so that would help. I mean, as silly as that may sound, I mean, that really did make me feel like that I wasn't alone because there were other people and they were conversing and I felt like I was part of it and I couldn't wait to watch the next chapter or the next show. So spending those months down in the basement gave me a lot of time for introspection and gave me a whole lot of time for healing. It wasn't important that I was lonely, even though that was a major factor going on in my life. It was important to realize that I became lonely when I focused on what I didn't have in my life. I became lonely focusing that I didn't have my wife anymore. And so that's the part that needed to heal. And that's why I talk about how important it is to really nurture and heal yourself before getting into a relationship. So when the relationship ends, even though it's inevitable that you'll feel sad, that you'll feel lonely, that you have some sort of foundation to come back to. So even though I did have lonely times after being with someone for 8 years, I still had a somewhat solid foundation to begin with. But I had to go through that grieving process. The grieving process is temporary. It should be temporary. But being alone all that time gave me the opportunity to grieve, gave me the opportunity to think about all the things I needed to think about and get through, and especially nurture myself. Like, what would I do if I was my best friend? What would I do with me? What would I say to me? I would say, you need to get out there and just, you know, start living your life. And that's what I did. I actually created a meetup group and started meeting with them. I started connecting with family again because I had been so separated from them for so long. I started getting to know my mom in a new way that I had never known before. I actually took the time and took advantage of that time of being alone by getting to know other people instead of just wallowing in my loneliness. And so Asha's song really hits me where it counts, remembering that time where I felt alone and remembering times in the past where I felt alone, not realizing that there's a whole world out there to meet or get to know better, people that were already in my life that I ignored pretty much for years and years and years because I had something else going on. And then when I renewed those relationships, they became stronger. Now, you may not have family like that that you can bond with. Maybe you don't get along with your family. But watching your favorite TV show is kind of a placator in place of people. I'm not saying that's what you should do. But I'm saying sometimes it's helpful. But that could be during the nurturing and even grieving process. But then you go out and do the things that you would do if you were in a relationship. Except, what would you do if you were in a relationship but you had the day off to yourself? What would you do? I think that's a great way to look at it. If you're not in a relationship and one day you were by yourself, what would you do? And that's the kind of thinking I was starting to have, is that, well, what would I do if I was in a relationship but she was gone for the day? Well, I might go do this and I might go do that. And I started doing those things and realized, oh, I can actually still enjoy life, even if someone else isn't in it. And that's what I want you to realize, that sometimes when you do feel lonely, that you can still enjoy life even though you don't have someone else in it. And just because the next person may not be a romantic interest, it could still be a friendship. It can still be one of a number of contacts or connections for you to just share your thoughts with. And so to kind of wrap that up, after 10 months of spending my time in the basement, getting my thoughts organized, and you know, during that period of time, I actually went to an online dating site for a month. I don't know if you've ever heard that story I've told on the air, but went to an online dating site, signed up, and after a month I realized, wait, I'm not ready to date. I'm living in my mom's basement and I'm still grieving for my divorce and all this stuff was going on. And I needed to self-nurture. I quit the site, but the day before I quit the site, a girl reached out to me and said, hey, I like your profile, let's talk. Mostly she wanted to talk shop because she liked the stuff I was doing in my life as far as business. And so I wrote back to her and said, hey, you know what? I'm not going to be on this online dating site anymore. I'm not ready to date. In fact, I got a divorce. I'm not really working and I'm living in my mom's basement. If you want to keep talking, great. Otherwise, I wish you the best. And I just signed off that way. And she wrote back and said, LOL. Your honesty is so refreshing. And I was like, what? Why are you still talking to me? I'm an adult male living in my mom's basement. I don't understand. And she just appreciated the fact that I was honest. And from that point on, we developed a really good friendship. It was long distance. She lived in Georgia. I lived in New Hampshire. And I was just honest with her. I'm not ready to date. And great, we can be friends. And I can ask you about your dating life. But I just need to work on myself. And she loved it. And we actually ended up talking almost every day. It was funny. And eventually, after 10 months, she was like, you know, we could have something. I wonder what would happen if we were closer. And I was like, really? You want to try this dating thing? And she's like, well, I don't know. So she flew up for some other purpose. We met. We got along great. And then she went back and I flew down there, spent some time with her. And eventually I moved out of my mom's basement. And that's the girl I'm with today, Asha. So there's some behind the scenes if you hadn't heard that before. But the whole point is that I chose to be alone. I chose to be single. I chose to not be with anyone, even though it might result in loneliness, because I knew I needed to heal from that. I knew I didn't want to carry loneliness into my relationships. And I worked on that and I went through a lot of healing. And a lot of the stuff that you hear on this show is a way to do that, is a way to nurture yourself so that you have a stronger emotional foundation going into any relationship. So you're not alone. In the broad sense of things, there is this show. Some people have this show as a part of their healing process. And healing during the lonely times is a great time to do it, because that means you're rebuilding that inside of you so that you don't carry it with you. Sometimes it takes a while, but you are definitely not alone, because you're listening to me right now. And because you're listening to me right now, you're not alone. You can hear my voice, just like I used to watch those TV shows and feel like a part of it. You are a part of this. So I want you to remember to keep your mind open and step into your power and be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.